All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are here this morning on case 12-0058, Maria Marusa et al. Versus the Erie Insurance Company. For the appellant, Mr. Berg.
Madam Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Aaron Berg. I am legal counsel for the appellants in this matter, Maria and Melanie Marusa. At this time, Your Honor, I would respectfully request 2 minutes for purposes of rebuttal. Your Honors, in this case, the appellants are seeking that the decision of the 8th District, which granted summary judgment to the appellee, Erie Insurance Company, on the issue of uninsured motorist coverage be reversed, that the appellants in this matter be granted summary judgment on the issue of uninsured motorist coverage, and that this case be remanded to the trial court for a determination on the issue of damages. Your Honors, this case is one of contract. The issue before this case is one of contract. Essentially, the issue being whether an insurer who clearly defines an uninsured motorist in its policy as one who has statutory immunity under the Ohio Political Subdivision Tort Liability Law or diplomatic immunity can thereafter deny uninsured motorist coverage to its insured because the tortfeasor has that statutory immunity. And I submit to this court that pursuant to fundamental principles governing contract law, as well as the salient Ohio case law, that they cannot. In this case, how we arrive at a contract issue, the underlying issue, or the underlying predicate circumstance, is an automobile accident. And the facts of the case are fairly straightforward and, in fact, have been stipulated to by the parties. Basically, the facts are that on November 11, 2009, there was an automobile accident, that the appellants were lawfully operating their motor vehicle through an intersection that was governed by a green light, that the tortfeasor was a police officer with the city of North Royalton, entered the intersection on a red light while he was responding to a call, and that in doing so, negligently struck the plaintiff's vehicle.
Counsel, let me ask you a question on that stipulation.
Yes, Your Honor.
Once the stipulation was entered into that the officer was negligent, does that preclude a finding that he was wanton or willful? The stipulation standing by itself.
Yes, in this case, there is no claim that there was wanton and willful or reckless. That is my understanding exactly of the part of the stipulation.
I understand no claim, but is it precluded by the finding or the stipulation that he is negligent?
Well, I think that the stipulation would certainly answer the question as to the negligence. I don't know that it would necessarily preclude a further finding of recklessness if that was pled in the alternative, for example.
Well, doesn't that go to the contract then if there is a possibility, however remote, that he could be found to be negligent above mere negligence? Doesn't that change the flavor of the case?
I don't know that it does. I would agree that it may. However, I think in this case that the parties are stipulating, in essence, to the fact that the officer at issue was negligent.
Well, this is a question of coverage, isn't it? I mean, there's a definition of uninsured motorist in the policy.
Correct.
Okay. What is the legal impact of the definition in the Erie insurance policy?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I think that the legal impact of the fact that the policy specifically defines an uninsured motorist as it does.
That doesn't extend coverage or obligate the carrier, does it? It defines it so we know what it is. And then in a separate section of the policy, mm-hmm. aren't there coverages, and aren't there limitations and obligations?
Correct. I would say that the language found in the policy defining an uninsured motorist as it does.
Yes.
In this case, that means that the tortfeasor is in fact an uninsured motorist. That being said,
so we get to that point.
Yes.
But that has at least helped me with understanding. It doesn't seem to impose obligations. We just have a person categorized as an uninsured motorist definitionally.
Correct. I would say that in and of itself does not obligate the insurer to provide benefits at that point.
Okay.
That's correct. What it does mean is that the insured has been involved in a motor vehicle accident with someone who is an uninsured motorist.
Okay.
The insured, the Maroussas in this case, nevertheless still have to prove predicate issues such as that uninsured motorist is the one negligent for the accident. That uninsured motorist is still the one that directly and proximately caused the damage. That uninsured motorist, that the Maroussas are not comparatively negligent to the extent of 50% or greater. And I think that's where the legally entitled to recover provision certainly does apply in this case. But it would not apply to prevent the Maroussas from having coverage in the case. It simply, the definition just means under the facts of this case, they don't have to demonstrate that they're entitled to UM coverage for purpose of this accident any more than the facts of the case and what's said in the contract. And I think that is a significant distinguishing factor from the Snyder decision that was addressed in the briefing and up through the 8th District.
So, Mr. Berg, the Snyder decision, would we have to overrule Snyder versus the insurance, the American Family Insurance, in your view?
Sure. Your Honor, no. No, I don't think in any way would this court have to overturn the Snyder decision. In fact, I think what was problematic in my view of the 8th District's decision is that it did not recognize the vital distinction between Snyder and this case. Because, as the court's aware, in Snyder, we were dealing with a situation where an insured was actually seeking coverage through the statute, through Revised Code 3937.18, and how that statute might afford help to the insured in the wake of a policy language that could prevent otherwise. And the court found that as amended, on October 31, 2001, that the statute did not provide it. Here, this court needs to look no further than the four corners of the contract itself to make the determination.
But wasn't the policy in Snyder similar to the policy that we have here in its language?
The policy in Snyder was very similar in the language to the extent of the legally entitled to recover provision. However, the pivotal difference between Snyder and this case is that in Snyder there was not language where the insurer actually made the affirmative step to specifically define an uninsured motorist as one with the statutory immunity, which is the reason why the insured in Snyder had to look to the statute, because the insured in Snyder had no other assistance from the policy language.
What if that language were not in the policy? What would your position be at that point? Would then it be a pure Snyder case?
In the Maroussas policy here, if the defining language—
Just assume for a moment that they didn't define that language in the policy. Would this be just exactly Snyder then?
I think Snyder would control the issue. Regardless of any philosophical opinion on the Snyder decision, yes, I do. Because I think that is the essential and the distinguishing factor in this case, is that here we do have what was absent in Snyder, and therefore this case need not be looked at from a apples to oranges comparison statute, how it relates to a contract, but rather an apples to apples, as we're only looking at this contract and the language contained therein.
Counsel, what would be the reason for defining the uninsured motorist to include this statutorily, in other circumstances, statutorily immune entity? under the umbrella of uninsured motorist for the purposes of this contract, if not to be inclusive rather than exclusive?
Yes. If I'm understanding the question, I think that the intent of this definition would be, as the drawer of the contract, what Erie is saying to its insureds, the people purchasing it, is we understand there are circumstances by which you could be involved in an accident by no fault of your own, and that you may not have any ability to recover in that circumstance because of the statutory immunity. And because of that circumstance, we're going to sell you a product that you're going to pay for that's going to expand that coverage. And in the wake of Snyder, well, actually, in the wake of the statute being amended, that is really the only way by which millions of Ohioans are going to be able to protect themselves, their loved ones, and their assets in cases of a motor vehicle accident caused by someone with the with otherwise statutory immunity.
So you're interpreting it to be a recognition that there's this limitation under statutory terms, and when you take just the statute at its face under these circumstances, but we're selling you a better policy, and this better policy is going to protect you further than what the Snyder policy, for example, would do. And, you know, when you look at the preamble to the contract, as was very articulately mentioned in the dissenting opinion by, you know, Judge Stewart, I think that it puts things in context.
Exactly. I would agree, Madam Judge. I would agree. And I also, if we're talking about the Snyder decision, I would also ask that the court look at two specific portions of the decision, being paragraphs 24 and 33, because I think in the Snyder decision, albeit through a vehement dissent, the majority still found that scenarios would come about such as the one we're talking here today. And specifically at paragraph 24, the court indicated that absent specific statutory or common law prohibition, parties are free to agree to contract's terms. And moreover, at paragraph 33, this court held that our ruling here, of course, does not prevent insurers from responding to consumer demand by offering uninsured motorist coverage without precluding recovery because of a tortfeasor's immunity.
Counsel, doesn't that really go back to my original question, though, to follow the inclusion theory that from an actuarial basis, the insurance company was saying, okay, we will even extend insurance to you for public sector people who harm you if they have exceeded negligence. Isn't that what they're really inartfully saying in this policy?
Well, I think that would also be the case. I mean, I think the policy would be read that if the operator were to be negligent or reckless, either one, yes, would give coverage to the Maruses in this case.
Mr. Berg, this is a policy that involves the Erie Insurance Company. What is your experience as to the universality of this kind of policy in Ohio? Is this a problem created by Erie in its definition, or is this pervasive in all automobile policies issued by carriers throughout Ohio?
Sure. Your Honors, and I know that I'm running out of time for my rebuttal, to answer your question directly, no. Our promise provision is one that's universally found, and it's found virtually in every endorsement of coverage, whether it's liability or MedPay or uninsured motorist. The issue in this case is that when Erie is selling its policy and it gives its insureds this broadened definition of an uninsured motorist to include something the statute doesn't require, well, now it has to live up to those obligations.
My point is, how many other carriers have this definition in their automobile policies, to your knowledge?
Well, to my knowledge, the cases on point that support it, for example, Progressive Insurance Company in the Peyton versus Peskin decision, I believe State Farm policy. But again, they are unique to themselves. And I do believe not all, but many insurers throughout the state certainly do include this policy language, yes.
Thank you.
And with that, Your Honors, I would yield the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Yoder? Ms. Yoder, why don't you start out answering the question that I asked him? What's the purpose of defining the uninsured to include this police officer?
Your Honor, I think that we may not know what the purpose is of that definition. It's the General Assembly. Thank you. It is the General Assembly that has chosen that definition. Erie is simply reiterating that definition within its policy.
Why?
And I think, well, I think that what we have to understand here is that there may be situations where there's a question as to whether someone with governmental immunity qualifies as an uninsured motorist. And that's what the Erie policy is.
So you're saying that the Erie policy is making a statement that if you are a police officer or a first responder, let's just say that, and you're involved with an accident with one of our insured, we will consider you uninsured under all circumstances.
No, Your Honor, not under all circumstances, only where that officer has governmental immunity. And I think that if you look at Chapter 2744, there are situations where an officer will not have governmental immunity even though they're responding to an emergency. For example, where the officer is reckless, there would not be immunity, and therefore the officer would not qualify as an uninsured motorist under the policy. However, if you look at 2744.02, the city of North Royalton or the city that the officer is working for could potentially have immunity. Because as this court explained in Anderson versus the city of Massillon, willful, wanton, and reckless are separate degrees of care. And the 2744 makes a distinction as far as a city's immunity and an officer's immunity.
Counsel, I'm not sure I understand your answer to Chief Justice. Are you saying if the officer here was wanton, there would or would not be coverage under this contract?
There would not.
Under wanton?
Under wanton.
And I think everybody in the room is now agreeing there's no coverage by your policy under negligent. So what in the world is the purpose of the clause?
If an officer, for example, although that's not the case here because the parties have stipulated that the officer was negligent,
right?
But in a situation where an officer was reckless, you could potentially have coverage under this policy if you look at 2744.02 and 2744.03, where it talks about a city's immunity and an officer's immunity. A city does have immunity where its officer acts recklessly. So the owner of the motor vehicle would be entitled to statutory immunity, and therefore we would have an uninsured motor vehicle under the Erie policy. The reckless officer, however, would not be entitled to immunity under 2744.03, and therefore the insured would be legally entitled to recover from that officer, and there would be coverage under the Erie policy under that scenario, for example.
Well, counsel, the paragraph in question says, for which the owner or operator the motor vehicle has immunity under the political subdivision. Now, if this officer were not responding to an emergency call, there would be no immunity if he's negligent, correct?
That's correct.
All right. So then you don't have an uninsured motorist issue, period. We do agree there was uninsured motorist coverage for this policyholder. Generally.
Yes, under the policy, yes. Just not under these particular circumstances.
And this definition says an uninsured motorist vehicle means a motor vehicle for which, in part four, the owner-operator has immunity under the political. So what's the purpose, back to the chief's question, what's the purpose of this paragraph? What does it cover if you use another provision of the policy to say no coverage?
No coverage under a circumstance where the insured could not legally recover from the tortfeasor. So what this policy does is it sets forth the statutory definition that Erie is bound by within the policy,
which would be coverage when?
For example, when an officer acts recklessly, responding to an emergency call, but is reckless in the operation of his vehicle.
But isn't that by definition a situation where that officer would not be entitled to immunity then?
The officer.
So aren't we right back to the first definition?
You're correct that the officer would not be entitled to immunity. The city, however, would be, because there's different standards for immunity for a city and for an officer.
So you're taking the language where the insurer could not recover as a limitation on the UM coverage. You're really looking at that phrase as a limitation to what the policy apparently gives at the beginning.
Well, what the policy isn't giving anything through the definitions. And then the legally entitled to recover is simply a condition.
But you started to say that generally there's UM coverage. There's a premium paid for UM coverage. And I hear you saying, though, that where the insurer could not legally recover, and that's a matter of fact and determination by the court, that's the point at which you take away potentially coverage under certain circumstances, correct?
That's exactly right, yes. And Justice Lansinger, as you pointed out and asked Attorney Berg about, exactly, although appellants couched their argument in terms of contract construction, what they are asking you to do is revisit and revise your decision in Snyder. This case is absolutely no different than Snyder.
Oh, it's absolutely different than Snyder, isn't it?
Well, you're on-
this language here was not present in Snyder.
Correct. It was not present within the four corners of the policy.
How does that make this case like Snyder, then?
Because Snyder was, the policy in Snyder was subject to the statutory definition. The absolute only difference is that that statutory definition is written within the Erie policy. Whether it's there or not, Erie is bound by that definition. All that Erie has done is made its policy clearer, because a consumer is not going to know that it has to consult 3937.18 to know what an uninsured motorist is. Erie has put that definition within its policy so that it's all right there.
But you're saying that by virtue of the fact that the Erie insurance has included the owner or operator of a vehicle that is subject to the immunity in a paragraph in their definition section is a revelation to the policy owner. That's a helpful thing to the policy owner. Is that what you're saying? That's why it's there?
Certainly, I think that it is helpful to the policy
owner. Okay, so if I'm buying uninsured motorist coverage and I see the definition of an uninsured motorist to include an officer or owner operator, someone subject to the tort limitation, I'm going to say, well, good, I've got expanded coverage here. I've got coverage that's going to cover under those circumstances because they're including that in an uninsured motorist coverage.
Again, it's only the definition. It's not the insuring agreement that you're referring to. And I think, as justices of this court have pointed out, insurance contracts are complex. They're difficult for consumers to understand. However, the fact that, at first glance or a cursory review, you may not come to the appropriate conclusion doesn't render an insurance contract ambiguous. That's just the nature of what we're dealing with.
How about when an insurer reads, to provide you with as near perfect protection, as near perfect service as is humanly possible, and to do so at the lowest possible cost is embedded in this contract?
Well, coverage is determined, as you know, by reading the insuring agreement, the exclusions, and the conditions and limitations. The policy language that you are referring to is not a part of the insuring agreement. It is a prelude to the party's agreement. It is simply Erie's
motto.
Nothing
to be ignored.
No, Your Honor, not something to be ignored, but it's Erie's motto. It's similar to an Allstate policy that indicates you're in good hands with Allstate, or a State Farm policy that says, like a good neighbor. It's not conferring coverage without limitation, and I don't think a reasonable person would conclude that by including their motto, their corporate motto, within the, at the beginning of the policy, that Erie's saying, we will cover you under any situation.
And Ms. Yoder, your position of Snyder was that the majority opinion there stated that legally entitled to recover, that phrase allowed as a specific circumstance invalidation of the statutory uninsured motorist for immunity. Is that correct?
Not that it invalidates the definition, Your Honor, but that
limits the coverage.
That an insurer can put limits on coverage, including.
So we would have to overrule Snyder if we were to rule against you. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So you are saying that under the stipulations that were entered into, there is no possibility of coverage here?
That is correct.
Yes. There's no possibility of coverage anytime there is a member of a political subdivision that is subject to the political subdivision tort liability law.
That's correct.
If they are responding to an emergency or operating a vehicle that is owned or operated or by the city or their employer.
That's correct. And
that's not correct, is it?
I'm sorry, could you?
The chief asked you, no possibility. That's not true.
I'm sorry, if the officer is negligent, there would not be coverage. There is a scenario if the officer were reckless, which we don't have here, but if the officer were reckless, where that there would be coverage.
So, Ms. Yoder, does the policy cover costs of defense? And we're only at the point of once there's a determination, if there's recklessness involved or negligence, or these facts are determined, and then you're saying the policy doesn't cover, but it would cover defense, would it not?
I believe so.
All right.
And the outcome or the decision in Snyder and the same outcome here is the right outcome. First of all, this court is to apply the plain meaning of a statute, and the General Assembly is presumed to have knowledge of this court's opinions. The General Assembly recently revised 3937.18. Despite its presumptive knowledge of Snyder, the General Assembly made no changes to the definition of uninsured motorist and did not change an insurer's right to limit or preclude coverage under specified situations. Snyder's been on the books for over 5 years. If the legislature believed that the outcome in Snyder was incorrect or that this court misapplied 3937.18, it had an opportunity to make the necessary changes when that statute was amended.
Counsel, let me ask you a question along those lines then. Ignoring the Erie policy for a moment, the police officer was an uninsured motorist, was he not?
That's correct.
Okay.
I think from the General Assembly's recent actions, it's fair to conclude that the General Assembly never intended to make uninsured motorist coverage mandatory when a tortfeasor has governmental immunity. Snyder gave effect to the plain meaning of 3937.18, and your decision in Snyder applies here as well. Additionally,
but you make a point of the fact that the General Assembly could have changed the effect of Snyder if it's so desired, but so too can this contract.
Certainly, Erie could exclude the definition, but I think then we're in a situation where the policy really is less clear to a consumer, which is what I had raised earlier. A consumer is not aware of 39, or likely is not aware of 3937.18, or that this definition is going to apply. However, the Erie policy, unlike the policy at issue in Snyder, is clearer because the definition is included within the terms of the agreement.
So you're saying the inclusion of this definition makes it abundantly clear to the policy owner you're not going to be covered?
Not saying that it's abundantly clear. Like I mentioned, you know, insurance contracts are difficult to understand. They're complex in nature. However, everything is within the terms of this agreement. The consumer does not have to consult an outside source, the statute, in order to understand what an uninsured motorist is. Your Honors, I would submit to you that you have decided this decision, or you have decided this already in Snyder. Appellants are asking you to overrule that decision. However, we believe that your decision in Snyder was correct and must be applied here. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument. Thank you.
Mr. Berg, you've got about a minute left.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Would you be able to meet the Gladys test to overrule Snyder if that's what this court was interested in doing?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Would you be able to meet the test of Westfield versus Galatas to overrule Snyder?
Well, again, I don't know that the position in this matter by the appellants is that we do not need to overrule Snyder in any way. But as far as Galatas, that, yes, the contract is to be examined as a whole to determine the intent of the parties, and that we do not need to look any further than the contract in order to reach the determination. As it relates to the statute, I think what's important is that in the section notes, when you go to the section notes at B2, that the purpose of the General Assembly of amending the statute was to eliminate the possibility of UM coverage or underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage being implied as a matter of law in any insurance policy. So the effect of that amendment really takes the legs out of the strength of the statute entirely. And so what you're left with is only what's found in policy language. And here in the definition section, when it specifically defines an uninsured motorist as one with the statutory immunity, to get back to Justice O'Neill's point, it is that if the uninsured motorist was reckless, as it's been addressed, there wouldn't be immunity. So that language wouldn't apply in any capacity to the operator. And again, this is an owner or operator. So in this case, really, because that wouldn't have immunity if it was recklessness, if the language set forth in this definition doesn't apply to the Maroussis case, then it would be extremely hard to really come up with a scenario where this policy language that the Maroussis are paying for would apply, because it stipulated that the officer was negligent. Therefore, he does have immunity. If he was reckless, this issue wouldn't be immunity. There wouldn't be the argument of whether there is immunity or not.
So the language legally entitled to recover, in your view, what does that do in the policy?
Sure. The legally entitled to recover provision still applies throughout the contract. And in this particular case, it would apply to the extent that the Maroussis or any other insured that is given an uninsured motorist protection under Definition 4 would still, again, have to prove that the uninsured motorist is at fault. You're not legally entitled to recover unless you prove the person's at fault. They still have to prove that the uninsured motorist directly and proximately caused the damages, or else they're not legally entitled to recover. They still have to prove, for example, that the Maroussis are not 50% or greater negligent themselves comparatively, or else they would not be legally entitled to recover.
So it's not a limitation on the immunity itself.
Excuse me?
It's not a limitation on the immunity itself.
That's correct. Because as this court has held and as the Supreme Court has held, is that a specific definition will override and take precedent to a general provision. Here we certainly have a specific provision that should eliminate any ambiguity as to whether or not it's covered for this circumstance, but that doesn't relieve the Maroussis from still having to prove the other predicate issues of legally entitled to recover, such as liability and proximate cause of damages.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you very much.